to God, and I'm asking God, just please give us this one. Just give us this play. I was asking, and I'm thinking, like, why not us?
In this week's Nolan from Adam podcast, we sit down with a man about to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, a man who I had the pleasure and honor of covering for every single play during his NFL career, and a man who I had the privilege of writing my very first book with, spending weeks with him, badgering him, harassing him, and I got to badger and harass him one more time to call him up to do this podcast to talk about his Hall of Fame career, the injuries that marred what would have been numbers that would have been even bigger than they already were, his memories of taking the Denver Broncos to back-to-back Super Bowls, and now he is on the threshold of being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Without further ado, the former Denver Broncos running back, current NFL Network analyst, and my friend and co-author, Terrell Davis.
T.D.
Mr. Schechter, what's up, brother?
It is a pleasure, and it is an honor.
It's been a while, too, man.
Yeah, it is a long time since I've spoken to you. And I've texted with you, but I don't think I've actually spoken to you since you were selected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So allow me to congratulate you belatedly, verbally, on your selection into the Pro Football Hall. That is unbelievable. That's awesome.
I know, man. It's got a nice ring to it, by the way. It doesn't get old being called a Hall of Famer or a Hoffer.
Did you ever think this day would come?
Hell no, man. You know me, man. Like, no. You know what? Over the last 3 years, yeah, I started thinking that it would happen, but it wasn't quite sure when. But you know, prior to that, no. I really didn't think it was going to happen, man. I was like, yeah, you know, maybe my time has passed, and you know, maybe I was the Hall of Good, but not the Hall of Great. So. But yeah, man, it was a surprise.
You were the Hall of Great. It's just that the great didn't last as long as we would have liked for it to have lasted. That's all.
Yeah. And the hard part about it is that I have no control over that. Like, yeah. I can't control the way people feel about me. You know, the only thing I can control is how I played. And so I left the game with one thought, and I was, man, you know, when I did play, I gave it all I had. You know, I had no regrets, and I felt good about leaving the game. So, and that's the only thing a man can ask himself is, you know, look back on your career and say, hey, were you proud of what you did? And I was proud of that. So I was fine.
And but, from what I remember, that was not something that motivated you while you played.
It didn't.
No, I know. You played because you loved it, because you were good, because you were overlooked, because people doubted you, because it was so sudden. The Hall of Fame was not a part of any of that at the time. Yeah. And so it comes along as a bonus to all of this. And the irony is, of course, and there's so much to talk about, but you go back to the play in which your career basically was cut short. It's the only tackle you've made in your entire career. It comes when Brian Greasy throws an interception, when your fellow offensive lineman Matt Lepsis lands on your leg. And I'll tell you this right now. I still remember driving home that Sunday night from Mile High Stadium and calling Frank White, and I was never more dejected over a player injury than when you hurt your knee on that play. Do you remember? What do you remember about that day?
That's one day that you never forget. I remember it happening. I remember the play. Greasy threw the pass. I was going out for a route, turned around. I saw Victor Green running with the ball. So, of course, my instincts kick in. Let's go make a tackle. He puts a move on me. He runs to the sideline to my right. I ran to go push him out of bounds. And all I remember or feeling is just burning sensation. Like my knees were on fire. Or my knee was on fire, and I was like, damn. And then I grabbed my knee, and I didn't think for once it was an ACL. I just thought, okay, you know, sometimes it gets tweaked, and the feeling goes, it burns, and then you're fine. And it's like, okay, I'll be all right. Go to the locker room, they tug on it, and they said, doctor, you know, Greek was like, damn, you know, I guess the Dr. Slagle, whoever did it, was like, well, we think it's it's a little loose, so we're just going to check it tomorrow, MRI, and make sure it's not an ACL. And, of course, I'm thinking, I don't think it's an ACL. Like, I wouldn't have been able to walk, is what I was telling him. And it's like, well, no, sometimes you can't walk. I was like, no, I don't think it's an ACL. And so we go the next day, they do an MRI, and they confirm it. But, my immediate reaction was, I'll be back. Like, okay, I'll rehab harder than I ever have. I'll be back in time to play next season. That was my initial thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was 3 years of hell. 3 years of just... The mind can be strong, but the body's going to have a say-so, boy.
And you were never the same after that, correct?
Never the same. There was no game that I felt that I was back. Even when I came back, I knew something was wrong, but when you've been a three for a long time and you're about a seven, that yeah. seven feels real good.
Yeah.
And you think it's a 10, but it's not. You're like, yeah, I feel good. I can go do all the same stuff. But, you know, in retrospect, man, when I look back on it, I was like, I had never felt confident in my knee ever, you know, since then. And I was just kind of, my will to try to work through it was there, but physically it was never there. I mean, I watched game film. I watched practice. And I look at the film, I'm like, damn, that dude looks horrible. He looks bad.
Yeah.
And I felt bad, and it projected on the tape, on the film. So, but that's all right. You know, all is forgiven. All is forgiven now. We are here, buddy.
You know what though? People that didn't get to see you play, young fans today. For those who don't know, you became the fourth player in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season, which was in 1998. You ran for over 6,400 yards in your first four seasons. Had that knee injury not occurred, TD, do you ever stop to think what kind of numbers you would have put up, what might have happened, how many more Super Bowls there might have been, anything like that? You ever stop to think what would have been were it not for the knee injury?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every once in a while you stop and you think, you know, if that didn't happen, I would have, you know, you think where you would have ended up. Could I have been somewhere around, you know, Emmitt's numbers or Barry's numbers or Walter's or, you know, Curtis Martin's. Yeah, I mean, you think about the what-ifs. But every time I have that what-if moment, I remind myself that the things that I'm sure about, that my career and what happened and how short it was and all the great things that happened, you know, I wouldn't give that up for anything. So if you give me 15 more years, mm-hmm. I mean, who's to say that I would have had those first couple of years, you know? So not to be greedy, and I think I just look back on it and just be grateful for the time that I had, man, and the memories. And that short period of time, a lot happened in such a short period of time that it was so unique yep. that I didn't leave the game with anything other than maybe the all-time marks that I didn't achieve. Everything else was there. You know, it's in the resume. It's been there, you know. I was league MVP, you know, Super Bowl MVP, two championships. Pro Bowls, you know, so everything was there. So there was nothing that I really left the game and looked back and said, I wish I had, you know, I had that.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing, you know, besides looking at some of these all-time stats and, you know, I'm nowhere to be found. You know, I think I'm probably 50th in total rushing yards, or rushing yards, you know. So that's one thing I would have loved to have been higher on the list, but, you know, that wasn't meant to be.
Well, you know, it's funny. We go back to your rookie year. And I think I've told you this before, and if I haven't, it's good that I tell you now. I'm standing in Greeley, Colorado, where we spent many summers, and I'm standing outside the area where the players used to get changed, the locker room area, and Hugh Millen was out there, and he said, "We got a problem this year." I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "We don't have a stallion in the backfield. We don't have a stallion in the backfield." and he just thought there was no running game, and nobody was going to come to the rescue. And I'm trying to think who was out there in front of you. Was it Leonard Russell in there at the time? I think Leonard Russell was, right?
And I think it was Leonard, but we had like Sheldon Cannelly. Remember? We had Aaron Craver.
Yeah,
we had Glenn Milburn.
Yeah, that
we
I remember.
Rod Bernstein.
Bernstein, definitely.
Yeah, we had Bernstein. we had, oh, remember.
John Ivlo?
Oh, yeah. Ivlo.
The white guy. Yeah.
I was behind all of them, by the way. I was on the bottom of the depth chart. So Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I can't blame him for saying that. Nobody knew that I was going to, you know, turn out the way that turned out. So I can't blame you for that. He was being honest, man.
But I remember thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a bleak season with a bleak running game. And then you burst onto the scene and we're in Tokyo and you lay out Tyrone Drakeford on the hit that everybody talks about and everybody remembers. And would you say that was the moment that catapulted you into the conversation there where you knew you might be able to do it?
No question about it. I mean, you know the stories out there, and that was it. You know, before that even happened, I was struggling in training camp because you get limited reps in training camp, and the only reps I was getting, it's hard to sort of make good on, you know, three runs a day, and then it was a pretty complicated system. You know, that West Coast system is pretty tough because they change a lot of, you know, not only personnel but formations, and there's a lot that goes on. Mm-hmm. So it was a tough rookie year, but I knew that if I got a chance to play, that I could at least show them that I'm a little bit more well-rounded than just a guy who can run. You know, I felt like my strengths were blocking, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield. And so if I could do everything well, I at least gave myself a chance to make the – I thought at the time I was trying to make the practice squad. That was my goal. If I can just make the practice squad this year, man. You know, if I can just get on that practice squad. And that was my goal. But when they put me in and on kickoff and I ran down and made that kick, yeah, they gave me a couple of runs during the game. And I was decent, and I didn't make any mistakes. So I think that showed them that, you know, he can handle playing in the system. Then they gave me more and more each week. And I was able to pick up the offense and kind of kept my mistakes to a minimum, which was good.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, man, it was just about heart. I was just playing with heart and just sacrificing my body and just showing them that I'm willing to do this. And I think they like that.
You ever stop now to think what a special time that was? Because I do. And I thank you for
absolutely.
That. You were a huge part of that. It was so memorable. And I was so young, which I'm not anymore. And it was so great to have nothing other than that to concentrate on. That was the only thing that I had in my life. I wasn't married, no kids.
Yeah, I know.
No nothing.
That's right. You were the young, you're the young reporter running around and doing your thing, man. It was a great time. It really was, Adam. You know, it just felt like it seems like everything was just perfect, even though it may not have been.
Yeah.
It seemed like that way to me. We went through a 3-year run where I felt like we were the best team in the National Football League. And I don't ever recall having to – I just thought practices were not easy, but they weren't like punishing practices. They were more enjoyable practices, the people that we play with, my teammates. You know, obviously Mike and Kubiak. It was – man, it, to me it felt like we were on the 49ers.
Yeah.
Which, you know, basically a little bit more east. And it was just an enjoyable time to play. You know, we were winning. And anytime you win, it makes life a lot easier. And, you know, I was single at the time. I didn't have a family, so that makes life a lot easier. And you know, I'm young, and, you know, obviously I got a new contract, and so that was, you know, that was beautiful. You know, it was a great time, man. And we just, you know, I really thought at that time that I would have retired from football with about 5 championships, and that's what drove me. It wasn't the yards or the Pro Bowls and All-Star, All-Pro years. It was we're trying to win championships, and I really thought I was going to walk out of there with 5 of them. But yeah, you know, I'll take my 2. You know, that was it was a beautiful time, man.
And a confession from me: getting to hang with you, which I called walking in the shadows of fame, was really the first time that I got to do that. When we worked on your book together, and I got to track you a little bit and see the life that you led. And I remember one time we were going out to San Diego to go visit your house where you grew up, and you were throwing out the first pitch for the San Diego Padres. And these are the things that you probably don't even remember that I do. And we were running to the airport, and we were going to be late, and I like to be early. You pulled into your driveway late that day, and I said, "We're never going to make it." And you said, "Oh, we're going to make it. We're going to make it. Just – We got what was though? Keep hope alive. That's what you could tell it. Keep hope alive. And we were the last alive, people bro. On that plane. And you looked at me. You said, "What did I tell you?" And I was all panicked.
We made it.
You kept hope alive, and you showed me what it was like just to be able to hang with a superstar, and to be around you. And for me, that was incredibly memorable, and I owe you a debt of gratitude for that. And I'll never forget that, and I thank you for that.
No problem. No, man, that was just two guys, you know, in their respective fields, man, just growing together. That's all. You know, you were young in your field. I was young and been a football player. But, you know, we had a great connection. And I thank you for doing the book. You did a great job of doing that.
Thank you.
I think it might be time for volume 3. Or maybe volume 2. I think we did 3 already. I think 3 or 2 came out. We did the addition after Super Bowl 32, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, an addendum.
Or maybe it was 33. But, yeah, man, it's good to hear from you and see you doing well. And look at you, man. You're doing your thing, Adam. Great.
Well, yeah, I learned a lot from you. So tell me this, TD. We got the Hall of Fame weekend coming up. What are you most looking forward to about this weekend?
Oh, there's a lot, man. It's obviously the gold jacket ceremony. When I get a chance to put on that gold jacket, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of people that I haven't seen in a while in my life. You know, they've gotten invitations, so I'll get a chance to spend some time with them throughout the week, and especially on Saturday night at the party.
Yep.
And then really just being with the gold jackets, man, to be a part of that fraternity that as people talk about, and I've seen it, but man, I think it's going to hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm trying to brace for it. I'm trying to anticipate what it's going to be like. I don't know, but I don't know, man. I'm looking forward to the entire weekend of just celebrating this phenomenal honor, man, to be honest with you, man. I want to take it all in, and hopefully it is it's as beautiful as I've heard. I know it is, so I'm not going to say that. It's going to be fun. I've already heard that whatever your expectations are for this weekend, you need to ratchet it up by tenfold because that's how
correct.
Incredible it is, yeah.
There are a couple of things that will stand out to you. The whole weekend will. But when they give out the yellow jacket that you already have gotten, but when they do that publicly and you get to try it on, and I guess Neil Schwartz, your presenter, will hand it to you, and all the Hall of Famers there watching, it
yeah.
will overwhelm you, and it will be a moment that will stay with you forever. The other thing that will stay with you is the Nitschke Luncheon. And I will tell you this, back when we were together in Denver, I was the former president of the Pro Football Writers of America, and as the president, you could go into the Nitschke Luncheon, which was an exclusive club where all the Hall of Famers get to roast the incoming class, which will happen this year. And it's unbelievable to stand in there and to hear the voices and to watch how they rip you. And some of the guys in there, Deacon Jones, too bad he's not here because that guy was incredible. But to watch these guys, the greatest football players ever alive, salute you, roast you, toast you, it is something that you will never, ever forget. And, I mean, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for you. Do you have any expectations for what any of this stuff will be like?
Well, I've heard that room, you know, you can't say anything. So it's almost like you're a rookie again. And like you said, you're sitting there and you're being roasted and they're congratulating you, but you just can't say anything. So it's like, I don't know if it's like being hazed again
yes.
to a certain extent, but that's okay. You know, if that's part of it, that's part of it. I'm not going to be upset. They can you know, say what they need to say, but you know, I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. I think that is part of, that's a unique experience to sit there and have that many Hall of Famers and legends speak to you. How many people can say that?
Yeah.
That is one of the rarest, you know, positions to be in. So I'm going to embrace it, you know. I don't know exactly what to expect with all this. I hear bits and pieces, but I'm going there with an open mind, and I'm going there just to really enjoy, hopefully, every moment of it.
Well, what do your 3 children know about your football career?
That's a good question. And, well, I think my oldest son, his name is Jackson. He's 6 years old. I think he, you know, his classmates or his teammates and at school, the teachers would tell him that, you know, your dad was pretty good. And but I don't think he fully understands it.
Yep.
He always tells me he's better than me. He's 6 years old, but he loves football already. he thinks he's better than me. I'm like, all right, brother. I like your confidence. Like, keep it up. But I think they know their dad played, and he knows NFL teams now.
Yep.
He's a 49ers fan.
Wow.
He wants to play tackle football. He knows tackle football. And so he's learning, but I don't think he's able to put it in perspective about who I am and what I've done, and which is good. To him, I'm dad, you know,
yeah.
and to me, that's the most important thing for me anyway.
How did he become a 49ers fan? And that's not Bobby Turner, is it?
No, his grandfather, my wife's dad, my father-in-law is a huge Niners fan. So he would buy him some Niners gear for Christmas and stuff. And I told him originally, I was like, no, man. I said, stop trying to turn him into a Niners fan, man. He's a Broncos fan. So I would buy him Broncos gear. But he apparently likes the Niners stuff. So that's where he gravitated towards. And I don't fight him anymore. So now whenever I bring him home some kind of football stuff, I'll bring him home like a 49ers hat or a shirt or something like that. You know, to me, as long as he's a football fan, I'm happy with that. I tried to make him a Rams fan because we live in L.A. And I felt like, you know, for me, I think it's important to grow up and support, like, the team you grew up in. I grew up in San Diego, and I was a huge Chargers fan.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I wanted to make sure that there's a game we can go to, you know, when the Rams, you know, Rams are here, and now the Chargers are here, so – either one of those teams would have been cool, but no, he's a Niners fan. The Broncos, I think, is like his second team, but the Niners are his first team.
We'll be back with more from Hall of Fame running back Terrell Davis after this.
You got two boys, one girl. Do you have any problem with your two boys playing football?
I don't. You know, Adam, if you had asked me this question, let's say 10 years ago, I would have said, yes, I do have a problem.
Huh.
And that's because of the techniques that, you know, when I grew up, and you know, it, when you grow up and, you know, it's changed now, but I remember in Pop Warner where we used to do drills that made absolutely no sense. Looking back on it, it was all just trying to make you tough. It wasn't necessarily trying to teach you technique or anything else. It was, you know, we had something called a bull ring. And that's like, yeah, I remember one person lined up in the middle, and you got the whole team was like in a circle around this person, and they would call out numbers. And you're in the middle of this bull ring, and you're trying to figure out who's coming at you, and they're calling numbers. And as you try to identify who's coming at you, you guys are supposed to, like, you know, thud up against each other. Hmm. I remember that drill, man. I think I ended up getting migraine headaches doing that. And it served no purpose. I used to think, man, what in the hell are we doing here? And I was like a 9-year-old kid, and I didn't think there was any sense to, you know, to doing it. And they would tell you when you wanted to tackle somebody, use your helmet, drive your helmet through the sternum, see what you hit. And now it's changed. You know, the NFL is doing a great job. They got the heads-up program in the little leagues. And people are smarter. Coaches are smarter. They don't practice as much with pads on. They've got concussion protocols where they can identify if kids had a concussion. They pull them out. So the measures they've taken, I'm happy with. And so and I'll be watching them. So, you know, I'll have a good sense of what coaches are doing, and if their coaches aren't good, I'll take them out and try to take them somewhere else. So I feel good about where the game is, and number one, he wants to play. I'm not forcing him to play. I didn't introduce him to football. Jackson just gravitated toward it,
towards it
because he sees me watching it. I cover it, and so when I'm watching games, he's right there watching it, and he asks me questions, so I answer questions. And it was funny, as he wants to play tackle with me all the time. He wants to go in the backyard and play tackle. I said, Jackson, we have flags. Oh, no, I want to play tackle. No, we can't play tackle. Anyway, I'll play tackle with him sometimes, you know. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I think he's going to play. He's 6 now. I don't know if I'm going to put him in tackle, like, next year or wait 2 or 3 years. But it's not going to be too late. I'm not going to put him in when he's 12 or 13. I want to put him in a little early, yeah.
You know, for those who don't know, I think you wore number 7 in high school, correct?
I wore 7 and 18.
Okay, but was retired, right? 7 was retired.
Yeah, they retired. They retired 7. That was my senior year number. I was 18 my junior year, but so, they retired that.
So who's the more famous number 7, you or John Elway?
Yeah. Who you think the famous number seven, man? Me.
That's
Adam,
right.
I'm the one, man. Come on, man. You know
and
that.
We'll tell that to John. And we'll tell that to John. You know, we talk about the high school retiring your jersey. This will be a bizarre out there question, and it'll make you think a little bit. Is there any chance Victor Dean's going to be in Canton or show up there?
There's a chance. Yeah, absolutely. There is a chance. I'd have to check the list, but I think he's confirmed. Don't quote me on that, but I'll check it again.
Victor Dean's invited, huh? See, for those who don't know, Terrell talked about the fact that when he was coming up in high school, he was not the most talented guy. There was a guy in his high school team that was all world in your mind, right? If my memory serves me correct.
Yeah,
Victor Dean, and Victor Dean, for whatever reason, didn't make it. You did make it, and when you were at your high school having your jersey retired, you looked up in the stands. There's Victor Dean. He's looking at you. You're looking at him, and you're probably wondering the same thing. What's he doing down there, and what am I doing up here?
That's probably true. I have seen Victor a few times after that. You know, Victor is real close friends with Frank White's, Frank, Show You Right.
Of course.
Frank is, my business partner, a close friend of mine. He's very good friends with Frank's son.
Wow.
So I've seen Victor a few times after that. And, we talked and we never talked about the book or, him not making it. We just talked about other stuff. But, yeah, I think he might be there. I think everybody has that story. I think when you see a player you've grown up with and you always say, man, this guy is just so talented. And then for whatever reason, life gets in the way and he doesn't make it and you make it. And they're probably asking themselves, well, how the hell did he make it?
Yeah.
And you're probably saying, well, how the hell, why am I here? Why is he up there? But that's just, I think it's to the point of life though, Adam. I think, for me, I didn't think about making it to the NFL. I just thought about just staying on track, man. Just giving myself a chance to be successful. And that was staying in school. Football took me somewhere, then so be it. If it didn't, then I was prepared to do something else. And lo and behold, football chose me, and that was great. So if anybody, whether you're a kid, if you're listening, I think the message and the lesson is, man, just make yourself eligible for greatness. Don't do things that will, put a detour or a roadblock in your road. Just stay on the path, go to school, do everything within your will, and let the cards fall where they may. But don't be the reason. Don't sort of help out with getting things off track, And that's kind of the message I try to send with young men and women. And hopefully someone's, one person listening, I think then I've done my job.
Good advice from a Pro Football Hall of Famer. What is business today for you? You talked about having a business partner. What takes up most of your time business-wise aside from working on NFL Network?
Yeah, well, a few years back, I've kind of changed that because I was so, inundated and not really having time to do a whole lot. I was kind of my mind and trying to work. So I've kind of sold off a couple of stuff and just kind of got things down to sort of the bare minimum now. And so I don't do a lot of just day-to-day business stuff. My business is kind of my family now. It's my wife and my three kids, and I cherish that moment. I cherish those moments where I'm able to see them, whether it's a soccer game or football game or basketball or, my daughter, she's two, so she had her little recital about 2 months ago, and then, man, I was just happy to be able to sit there and watch her. So I don't do a whole lot of like business stuff. I got some other little stuff on the side, mainly just, properties. But yeah, I don't do a whole lot of stuff, man. And that's kind of by design.
Good for you and good for your family.
Yeah, exactly. Other than like speaking on the road and traveling and doing appearances, I try not to travel a whole lot. I try to, this is the one thing I'm blessed. And I think back to how when players have families during their career, that's a lot they miss, man. And I'm now seeing what it is that you sacrifice when you have a family while you're playing. And I say this for real, man. When I'm sitting out there watching my son, my sons or my daughter do whatever she's doing, I look up to God and I say, thank God that I'm blessed that I can be here for them. That really is something that I cherish, man.
It's you had a tremendous opportunity to concentrate on football when you played football, and now your family post-football. You mentioned watching football with your son. Who's the one running back today that you like to watch?
I like a lot, man. You know, I think because I played it, I think I enjoy watching the different backs. I mean, like last year, Devontae Freeman was like, you know, he was a joy to watch. You know, David Johnson, he's always fun to watch. I guess the guys who can do a lot, he certainly does a lot there. You know, when Adrian Peterson is Adrian Peterson, that is a blast. You know, it's something that you must watch. Lev Bell, you can't. You know, just so many good backs, and then of course Zeke coming in last year, his rookie year, he was fun to watch. I like to see it where it looks like it was sort of a game that was played in the 90s.
Oh yeah,
you know, I kind of like to see those games. Where there's some volume carries going on and there's some line that is just, you know, getting after the team and you know what's coming, but they can't stop it. I enjoy watching that.
I think we may get some of that of Leonard Fournette this year, TD.
I kind of think so. I think Jacksonville's got themselves a guy that I know they're going to have to lean on a little bit. Because, you know, if you want to give Blake Bortles a chance, I think you've got to ride that guy. I mean, he's built for it. You know, he's built for that, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. Another guy, Samaje Perine from Washington, man. I've done a thing with – yeah, I watched him out of Oklahoma, and, you know, this cat is – he is thick. I don't know if you've ever seen him, Adam, or he
yes.
is about as – he is built like no other. I mean, he's a throwback. He's kind of a fullback in the way he's built, but he is he is thick, and he runs with an attitude, and you know. So I will be interested to see how he what he does, and of course Mixon. You know, after Joe Mixon, and see what Cincinnati and how he's going to perform there. And of course, a lot of people had him rated so high, but of course, you know, as off the field, that issue that he had kind of kept him, you know, from being a first rounder. But there's a lot of young backs that's coming in that I'm looking forward to seeing.
Is Perine your sleeper rookie running back for the year?
I told somebody that was my that's my fantasy football. I'm playing fantasy football for the second year in a row, and so that's kind of my guy. I don't want to tell anybody about him, but I guess everybody.
But the word's out now.
Yeah, that's my sleeper for the year. That's my guy.
You say you play fantasy now, huh?
For the first time I played it last year. And I did okay. I did fairly well. I went to the playoffs and I lost in the quarterfinals.
To
know?
Who?
I can't remember. Can't remember who beat me, but I think I got the best out of my roster last year. I think I did. And so this year, the first 3 weeks, I was an absent GM. You know, I was just the computer was just picking my roster. And a lot of guys, I was in a slot that weren't even playing. And I'll look up and I'm like, okay, who's playing this week? And I see I have two guys who are you know, they're on a bye or they have an injury and they're in my lineup. And so that was killing me. And I finally started becoming more of an active GM and got involved and made a few trades and, you know, kind of did some things to the roster and got it fairly, you know, looking fairly good down the stretch. And you know, it was fun. It's exciting. I see why people play fantasy.
Oh.
It's a blast. It's addictive, man.
It has.
I see why they play it.
Did I ever tell you
the story about Aaron Craver?
No.
Okay, Aaron Craver, in my rookie year, we are playing. I want to say the Chiefs, but I don't quote me on that.
Okay.
You remember my first year, we sort of ran an offense where it was the halfback and fullback were interchangeable.
Yep, yep.
So we're on the goal line. We're in split back formation. We're calling a run where I'm supposed to get the ball. Aaron's going to do a dive block, and it's a power.
Mm-hmm.
John calls the play over, which means now I'm blocking, Aaron's running. I block, Aaron gets the ball, he scores a touchdown. We go on the bench, we're sitting there, and I see Aaron, and he has this look on his face. And I ask Aaron, hey, man, what's going on? And he said, man, I needed you to score that touchdown. And I said, for what? He said, I have you on my fantasy football team. I was like, what the hell is a fantasy football team? I've never even heard the term, to that point. And he explained to me what it was. And Aaron would be on the bus, the airplane. He'd have this, whether it was US, I guess some magazine, USA Today or something.
Yep.
And he's setting his roster. And back then,
wow,
you had to send in your, yeah, he was fully engaged in every single sport, basketball. I think he did baseball, but I remember basketball vividly. And that was weird, man. So
well, I think it has fueled the popularity of the sport today. So if you were starting a team and you could pick any running back in the league today, who would you take?
Wow. Any running back in the league today.
You got the number one pick. You're going running back. Number one pick. Who are you taking?
Number one pick. Oh. Probably Bell. Give me Bell. Yeah. I think I'll go with Lev Bell. Yeah. Just because he can do so much, man. I think there's a premium on the back who can catch out of the backfield. I mean, I think he has an amazing game, man. It's one that is hard to teach. And I've spoken to running backs to ask them if that's something that they can mimic in terms of his patience. I've seen patients that are good, but I've never seen a guy just literally stop and then walk and then explode. And he does it on a consistent basis. It's remarkable to watch the man run.
Have you ever had a chance to counsel any of these running backs in the league today? Because I would think that you would be a valuable resource to them. Have any of them ever come to you for guidance and wisdom?
You know, I get some calls every once in a while, but nothing on a consistent basis where they're asking me, how to do something. Hey, running back is a unique position, and that's why you don't see a lot of, like, running back camps. You see them for little kids a little bit, but I can do a quarterback camp. I can do a receivers camp, an offensive line camp, a pass rush camp. There's a lot of the running back position that is instinctive, and it's hard to teach. To me, I try to work mainly on sort of the mindset more than sort of their physical gifts, because everybody has a different gift, mm-hmm, and a different, skill set. So it's really about a mentality, man. It's really about believing that you're the best out there, and you have to command more carries. And if you're not getting those carries, it's hard for a back to sometimes get on track. I have some guys calling me, or I talk to a guy, and he's like, I'm just not getting enough carries. And so that's true. If you're only getting 5 carries a game, the 5 carries you're getting, you're going to try to do too much with 5 carries. You don't really let the game come to you.
You press.
You press too much. And so now those, you can't set things up for later.
Yeah.
And when I talked to somebody, I said, man, if you're not giving a back high teens or in 20s with carries, it's hard to see what a guy can do. Because I didn't have to worry about that, Adam. I knew I was getting 25 carries a game.
Oh, yeah.
So, so if I saw something early in the game where I wanted to bounce it, but I'm setting it up, so I can bounce it down and pick up 3 yards, or I can wait and keep baiting that guy to believe I'm going inside. And so I'll run it inside, and I might make a yard. But I know what I'm doing. Okay, I run it back inside, I might make a yard. Well, the next time he thinks I'm going to come inside. Well, now I'm setting him up. Now I can bounce it. Well, if you're getting 5 carries, you don't have the luxury of doing that. you're going to get pulled before you can set something up. So a lot of these guys, these days, and I feel bad for some of these backs. They're getting 8 carries, and then they have rotations. And
correct.
The rhythm is off. That's a tough world to be in.
It's harder for a back to get all those carries that you're talking about to get into that rhythm. It messes up fantasy teams, which is a separate point. And it's tougher for these guys to establish themselves the way that you did back in the day.
Yeah, and it keeps their value low, man. That's the other thing. You talk about trying to create a value of significance, and now you got contract situations. You want to make yourself valuable, and if teams feel like if you're not getting carries and you're splitting reps with two other backs, and everybody else is getting the same carries, listen, they don't need you. They'll bring another back in who can do the same thing. So in one respect, I feel a little bad. It's a tough environment for a back, because we've seen what's happened to the running back. and we're seeing what's happening. Maybe a little bit of a comeback in some respects, but I don't expect it to come all the way back as if we were in the 80s or 90s.
No, it's turned into a passion league. A few other things before I let you go, TD. You've been so generous with your time, and I greatly appreciate it. As you look back at your career, what was the single most memorable moment of it?
Well, I have two. One, from a team standpoint, and for some reason this stands out more than anything, the last play of the Green Bay Bronco game, which was Super Bowl 32, yep. When John Mobley knocked down Brett Favre's pass.
Yeah.
That play, it just gets replayed in my mind over and over and over. And I think part of it is because of the culmination of what it signified. Like, that was it. That was the last play of our season. And that play, once he knocked the ball down, we were then champions. And I remember being on the sideline with Shannon and John. And in my mind, I'm praying to God. And I'm asking God, just please give us this one. Just give us this play. Just, you know, I was asking, and I'm thinking, like, why not us? And when that ball hit the ground,
it was you.
Man, I went crazy.
Yeah,
I just couldn't believe, you know, that feeling that came over me was like, man, this is it. Like, I mean, it was relief. It was joy. I was like, you know, that was a beautiful thing, man. So that play is one from a team standpoint. I guess the other play would be when I broke 2,000 yards against Seattle.
I thought you might say that.
That play, because I knew we were close, and it was really one play away. And that play it stood still when I went back, you know, went to the huddle, and of course everybody's looking at me, and John is like, hey, all right, TD. You know, the crowd is going nuts. They're chanting TD up there. It was like being in a.
Oh, it's incredible.
It was. So, and everybody knew the moment was being teed up for it to happen. And I was just making sure that I didn't mess it up. You know, I'm like, all right, TD. So I'm thinking in my head, okay, what am I going to do if I score? And I'm thinking, okay, don't drop, don't fumble. You know, so everything's trying to enter your mind, and I'm trying to push out the negative thoughts and just trying to remind myself of the positive thoughts of, hey, get the ball. You've done it before. You know, just let the game come to you. Don't try to do too much. And then all of a sudden it gets quiet, and then the ball snap, and it's like, uh-oh, here we go. And I remember taking that drop step on that 19 handoff. I got the ball, and I was coming around the corner, and I remember I had to go around the corner, the edge, and then I had to duck inside. I think it was either Ed. I'm not sure who it was. And then as I saw some light, and I'm thinking to myself, well, here it comes. And I, you know, had to run through a few tackles, and then got knocked out on the bounce. And that was it, man. That moment. I cherish that moment, man.
It's etched in a lot of people's memories. I think you came into that day needing about 154 yards. There was a question about whether or not you could get it done. And within the first few moments of the game and the first few runs, it became very apparent you were going to get whatever you needed that day. They were going to get you whatever you needed that day. And you were going over 2,000 yards. And you did it in a game against the late, great Cortez Kennedy, which is also amazing.
Yeah. And Cortez is phenomenal. Every year we played against him, man. He was a terror, like, during the game. But every time after the game, he was the one player that would always come over and say, hey, man, and just tell me and just appreciate my game. You know, tell me, hey, brother, hey, man, I love the way you play this game. And that meant a lot to me to have the opposing player, especially for somebody as great as Cortez, to say that to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, before that game, Adam, there was no way in my mind that I thought I was going to break that, you know, 2,000 yards. I didn't. I mean, you know the scenario, man.
Oh, no, a lot of people, it was a big question. But to my point, once it started, it was no question. Like, what was everybody wondering about? This is getting done today.
Well, they came to me the night before, and I think Bobby Turner was like, hey, you know, you're going to start the game, you're going to play, and then we're going to pull you. And it was never told to me that depending on how you played, we might keep you in longer. No one said that. It was just like, all right, we're going to put you in and play you a few games, a few plays, and then we're going to pull you. But apparently, as the game unfolded, a lot of, you know, I guess Mike and Kubiak and in the line and Alex Gibbs, everybody was like, hey, man, keep him in. Let's just get it. You know, let's just go for it. And so I realized after a while that I'm like, I'm not coming out this game, I don't think. So let's go for it, man. Let's do it.
Bobby coming to the ceremony? Yes, right?
I hope so. I hope so. I want to say yes, that I saw his name there. But, you know, he's in camp, and a lot of guys are going to be in training camp. So
how about Alex Gibbs?
Alex is coming, yes. Alex would be there.
And which offensive linemen are coming?
That I don't know. I don't know.
Zim will be there. Stink will be there. Habib will be there. Nalen. They're all going to come to see their guy get inducted. Come on.
I hope so. And again, I haven't seen the whole list. My wife is handling all the lists and stuff, and I haven't seen it. But I would certainly – I'm going to take – obviously I'll take a look at it at some point once it's all confirmed. But, yeah, man, I can't wait to see those guys. Man, I can't thank them enough, man. We had a ball doing it, and I think Tony Jones and
T-Bone.
Who else is going to be there? I think Dan Neal and Nalen. We'll see if those guys show up. But
you got to thank Broderick Thompson too, who's not going to be there.
Broderick. Unfortunately, I know. Man, that was
don't
a tough
forget
one.
To thank him. Motorcycle crash. I love that guy. How's your mom doing? Your brothers? Everybody like that I know from a previous life. Everybody's good?
Everybody's doing well. Yeah, everybody's doing well. You know, it's everybody's just trying to do it. My mom, she's fantastic. She's fantastic. So she's still in Denver. She's loving it there. Of course, Frank is in San Diego.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing well. Yeah. That's going to be the great thing. So we get a chance to reunite, and everybody gets to come back together and kick up some old memories.
I'm excited to see everybody. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody because I RSVP'd yes to TD. If you had
thank you, Adam. Yeah, thank you, brother.
I wouldn't miss it. I wouldn't miss it. I wouldn't miss it for anything. last segment of this podcast is something I call Last Call. And the last call is this. I ask a few quick questions. When is the last time you cried?
Last time I cried was about probably like 2 weeks ago.
What happened?
I was watching, man. You know what? The older I get, man, I'm getting soft. I'm getting soft. that's just a fact, brother. I mean, I have kids, and now my emotions are just running crazy. I was watching this. It was a special or something. I cannot remember what it was, but it was one of those documentaries, and it just moved me. And so I just started. I mean, I didn't like boohoo, but yeah, I got a little teary eyed when I watched that.
And there'll be more of that in Canton as well. If you had one last meal on Earth, what and where would it be?
What and where would it be?
What's TD's last meal?
Yeah, it's probably this is probably simple, man. But it's probably Mexican food, man. I'm with tacos and some chips and salsa and some guacamole and a nice burrito and a margarita, man. That's probably my last meal.
There you go, there you go. And who's gonna be at that dinner if you can invite anybody? Like. One, two people, three people, whatever you want. Your last dinner party for your last meal. You're having tacos and margaritas. Who else is joining you there?
In my family, my wife and my kids, man. And if I could have more, it'd be my brothers and my mom, and it would be my family. Yeah, no doubt.
I look forward to seeing you and your family in Canton. I thank you for the time today. I thank you for the time through the years. I congratulate you and salute you. The way that you would salute all the other people back in Denver, TD.
Mile high. Thank you, Adam. Hey, I salute you back, man.
Thank you for everything, my friend. Thanks for the time today. And so there he is, the man about to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Terrell Davis. Thank you, Terrell, for joining us this week. Next week, we'll be joined by Matthew Berry and Field Yates as we have a special fantasy football edition preparing everybody for their upcoming fantasy draft, some of the sleepers, some of the players to avoid, and all the fantasy secrets that everybody wants to know as they get ready for their mock drafts. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you back here next week. Thanks very much.